Welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the largest segment of society, to the vast majority of people who have come to know that the world's political, religious, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they're counterproductive, and that they can't be fixed. Today, in our concluding hour, we're going to offer the ultimate ray of hope. We're going to use evidence and reason to explore what Yahweh had to tell us and to contrast that with what religions have to say. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, it's 877-300-7645. Yesterday, I began the opening hour by sharing a statement that I had reason to translate yesterday from Yeshaya. Yeshaya is the longest of the prophetic books. It happens to be the one that we happen to have the entire scroll extant in the Qumran or Dead Sea collections. Most others are large fragments of scrolls, but in the case of Yeshaya, we have an entire scroll completely intact, dating to around 225 BCE. And we turn to what was revealed in the 8th chapter. And I'm going to reprise that today, because what I did is that recognizing that GCN is a conspiracy-oriented network and that its lead show is perhaps the lead show on conspiracies. I would think that only Coast to Coast would have a larger following in terms of reporting on the odd and peculiar. And during the reading of this particular statement from God regarding the idea that we ought not be engaged in any form of promoting conspiracies, I expected that I would receive a number of letters, which I did. And it's interesting that all but one said, well, you know, if God's that clear and doesn't want us to be promoting conspiracy theories, I'm out of the conspiracy business. I'm going to focus instead on things that are more important. And all of them sent me emails and said, let's talk about questions that I have regarding the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, the covenant relationship. One didn't. One didn't care what God had to say. No, he was religious about his conspiracy. And so, while there is just an unbelievable mountain of news to report on and comment on, particularly as things are transpiring in Iraq, Syria, and Israel today, I'm going to devote this first hour to dispelling one of the favorite myths of conspiracy theorists. Now, those who listen to this program know that I completely debunked the myth of chemtrails, showing that water vapor is a natural byproduct of the combustion process in jet engines, and explained the nature of the fuel for jet engines, the internal combustion that takes place in the hot section of a jet engine, and how the water vapor is formed through that process, and then how it is expelled through the exhaust of the aircraft, creating nothing but water vapor. From that point on, I've not heard a single person who has clung to the myth that chemtrails are somehow a government scheme to poison people, because, frankly, that theory is absolutely ludicrous. Now, what I promise to do today is to debunk the second favorite theory of conspiracy advocates, Building 7, World Trade Center. I'm going to begin by telling you what actually happened to the World Trade Centers as a whole, and then I'm going to share Yah's statement as to why we should not advance conspiracies, and then we're going to consider exactly what transpired regarding that specific building, Building 7. Now, I don't expect that to dissuade the hardcore advocate of conspiracy. They are like a religious zealot. No amount of evidence and reason is going to influence them. They'll simply, like a mosquito that has bitten someone once, they're just going to go to another spot and bite again, ignoring what occurred the first time. It is the same thing as every discussion I ever have with a religious person. They bring up a point, you prove emphatically that their statement is wrong, and rather than acknowledging that they're wrong, they simply raise another. And that's what would happen with will happen with the devoted conspiracy theorist. But if you're on the edge, if you think maybe there's some credibility to what they're saying, and you don't really want to disassociate yourself completely from them, concerned there might be something to the Building 7 myth, then this first hour of the program is for you. What happened on 9/11 is really the consequence of a series of actions, as things most often are. Back 1,400 years ago, Muhammad created Islam. Muhammad was created Islam and pretended to speak for his wannabe god Allah, who he modeled after Satan. It was his alter ego as well, to satiate his personal lust for sex, power, and money. If you read the Quran, if you read the Hadith, the oral reports from Muhammad and his companions, that conclusion is irrefutable. It's obvious. And in an attempt to satiate his lust for sex, power, and money, Muhammad, after being laughed out of Mecca in shame following the satanic verses and following his wild ass ride on the winged donkey to the non-existent temple in the non-existent city at the time of Jerusalem. He formed a pledge of Aqaba to wage war against all humankind, where any believer in his new religion would become a terrorist and pirate on his behalf. And Muhammad began inspiring raids. In fact, he led 75 terrorist raids during the first 10 years of the Islamic era. And during those 10 years and 75 terrorist raids, he and his mujahideen, his jihadists, raped, plundered, terrorized everyone within camel ride of his new home base, which was Yathrib, today's Medina. So it is the creation of the terrorist manifesto known as Islam, the Quran and Hadith, that the beginnings of what happened on 9/11 commence. Now, you might wonder why the World Trade Center, why the Pentagon, why the United States, why would Islam care about these things? And for that, we have to go back a lot less far in time to Saddam Hussein's invasion of Kuwait. Now, Saddam Hussein was a secular dictator. The Kuwaitis, as were the Saudi Arabians, were fundamentalist Muslims. The Kuwaitis and Saudi Arabians at the time were the primary financier of Islamic terrorism and of fundamentalist Islamic mosques. Their funding all came from oil, from OPEC. The West, in fact, the world, was vastly better off with Saddam Hussein in control of Kuwait than the emirs in control of Kuwait. But George Bush didn't see it that way. So he negotiated with the Saudi Arabians and the Kuwaitis for the right to use American troops to do something that was foolhardy, counterproductive, suicidal, to push the secular dictator out of Kuwait and return the country to the fundamentalist Muslim warlords. Now, you might say, what did that have to do with 9/11? Well, this is what occurred. Prior to that time, the United States, with Zbigniew Brzezinski and with Jimmy Carter — Zbigniew Brzezinski was Jimmy Carter's national security advisor — Brzezinski came up with this harebrained idea that the United States could give Russia, the Soviet Union at the time, a taste of what the Soviet Union had given Americans in Vietnam, where in Vietnam, it turned out to be nothing but a fiasco, a proxy war, whereby the Russians were able to arm the North Vietnamese to bring down American aircraft and to kill Americans, and thereby fight a proxy war. 60,000 Americans died in that process, making a bad situation worse. We learned nothing from it. But Zbigniew Brzezinski said, well, we could punish the Soviet Union for taking advantage of our stupidity in Vietnam by arming the Taliban and having the Taliban wage war against the Soviet-backed government in Afghanistan. Now, what's so hypocritical about this is that Jimmy Cotta, a peanut farmer who was holier than thou, the Christian, if you recall, said that the U.S. would ban the Moscow Olympics because of the civil war that the Russians were perpetrating in Afghanistan, when in fact Jimmy Carter started that war. The United States is responsible for the million deaths associated with that war. Anyway, Zbigniew Brzezinski and Jimmy Carter engaged the CIA to meet with the head of the Pakistani government, and in so doing, rented the Taliban, which was an agency of the Pakistani ISI, which is the intelligence arm of the Pakistani military, which the United States funds almost in its entirety, that we rented the Taliban from the Pakistani government and agreed to bribe the Pakistani government to allow us to do this, providing them with ever more weapons, and then we gave $5 billion worth of weapons to the Taliban for them to deploy against the Soviet-backed government. Well, along that with the Taliban, there was they had a new recruit. Dr. Azam had created an organization called Al-Qaeda. He was a graduate, if you will, and a participant in the Muslim Brotherhood. He recruited one Osama bin Laden to be part of his organization. And Osama bin Laden had computer skills, and he was a very effective recruiter. So in addition to using the Taliban, the United States government and its CIA incorporated Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda into their plans to recruit jihadists to deploy the American weapons against the Soviet-backed government in Afghanistan. So you say, what does all this have to do with 9/11? Well, the story gets far muddier. What happened is that after prevailing in what was called the Great Jihad, where the Al-Qaeda and Taliban unified force, wielding American weapons, bloodied the Soviets sufficiently that they withdrew from Afghanistan, that occurred at the same time that Saddam Hussein, who was an enemy of Al-Qaeda, was invading Kuwait. So when Shattering Myths continues, we'll pick up the story after this point. All right, so the Taliban, which America rented from the Pakistani government, and Al-Qaeda, which was a tiny part of the association at the time, used for recruiting Mujahideen and jihadists, prevailed with American weapons against the Soviet-backed government. That prevailed is a, I should qualify that. A million people died. Millions were exiled. The country was utterly destroyed. The exercise might have brought in a sense of joy to Zbigniew Brzezinski, but it was a horrible, grotesquely immoral, murderous idea. But having brought down the second largest military in the world at the time, albeit with American weapons, Al-Qaeda, who hated Saddam Hussein. So when George Bush said we need to invade Iraq because he's harboring Al-Qaeda, he just flat out lied. Al-Qaeda, particularly Osama bin Laden, and Saddam Hussein were archenemies. Saddam Hussein was the single most effective dictator in the Middle East at preventing fundamentalist Islamic terrorism in his country. There just was none. And because Saddam Hussein was a secularist as opposed to a fundamentalist Muslim, Osama bin Laden wanted him deposed. And so when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait, Osama bin Laden, on behalf of the base, Al-Qaeda, went to the Saudi government, which is really not a government. Saudi Arabia is a personal estate. It's a fiefdom. And he was very close to the ruling family because his father was the most esteemed builder of palaces and mosques for the royal family, the Sauds. And so he presented his case, and he had a very credible case. He says, listen, if we just brought down the second largest military in the world, in the Soviet Union, it's for darn sure that we can shoo the Iraqi military, Saddam Hussein, out of Kuwait and protect Saudi Arabia and the Islamic holy sites of Mecca and Medina. He had a credible case. But the Sauds know Islam pretty well. They're fundamentalist Muslims. Just no Muslim trusts another Muslim. That's why you have the war going on in Iraq today between Shiites and Sunnis. They don't trust each other. It's why in Syria you've got Sunni Mujahideen fighting and killing Sunni Mujahideen. Al-Nusra Front is at war with the Islamic State, formerly known as ISIS. And so they didn't trust Osama bin Laden. They recognized that if Osama bin Laden prevailed, and he would prevail at pushing the Iraqis and Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait, that he wouldn't leave. And that he would claim Saudi Arabia for himself because he was a more devoted Muslim than were the Sauds. So when George Bush, who's made his financial fortune consulting with the Sauds and managing their financial investments, which were mostly in U.S. military hardware, told the Sauds, you're going to make a fortune here. Will you deploy U.S. military hardware? You're heavily invested in those companies. They're all going to report huge profits. And we'll use the U.S. military to push the Iraqis back, saving the kingdom, and thereby entrenching your position of power. And when we did that, Osama bin Laden said, it's just the nature of Islam. I will seek revenge. That's what Muslims do. They always do it. They're always predictable. And so rather than being adverse, and that was the only thing that that Osama bin Laden cared about, was pushing infidels, non-fundamentalist Muslims, out of positions of power and out of infecting, as he would view it, the Islamic world, the Middle East. That was all that he cared about up to that point, is pushing non-fundamentalist Muslims out of the Muslim Middle East. All of a sudden, he had a all-consuming foe, the United States, which had taken away the great prize. And so he had a motivation to lash out at America. Now, he didn't conceive the plan of 9/11. That's a complete lie. He didn't even provide the personnel for 9/11. That's also a lie. The plan for 9/11 goes back to a fellow named Ramzi Youssef. Ramzi Youssef was living in the Philippines. He had no association of any kind with Al-Qaeda. He was part of the Philippine Islamic terrorist organizations. There was hundreds of names of these various groups. And he had conceived the Bojinka plot, which is where you carry liquid explosives on airplanes, which is why we've been limited in terms of liquid explosives. He actually tested it, killed one person on a flight across the Pacific Ocean, was going to deploy that plan. But there's more to Ramzi Youssef, and we'll consider his plan when Shattering Myths continues in a moment. All right, we're telling the story of what caused 9/11, because there's a whole group of people, particularly those that love GCN, because one of its shows in particular is all conspiracy, but yeah, a lot of advocates of really crazy ideas on this network. So the path to 9/11 really commences in earnest in the Philippines. Ramzi Youssef is a fundamentalist Muslim. He begins devising plans to exercise jihad in Allah's cause against non-Muslims. And he thinks he can make a great splash by bringing down multiple airliners, all en route to either Asian countries or the United States. And he came up with the concept of exploding liquid explosives, nitroglycerins kinds of materials. And his hope was that he could explode them over the wing of the aircraft and ignite the fuel, creating a giant fireball. Plan did not work as expected. One person was killed, however, when he had the test run of that plan. Ramzi Youssef also tried to kill the Pope when the Pope visited the Philippines. And the other issue with Ramzi Youssef, the other thing that is particularly interesting about Ramzi Youssef is because his apartment was raided when it was learned that he was trying to assassinate the Pope. On his computer was the plans for 9/11. He had conceived them. He had conceived the idea of taking fundamentalist Muslims from the most fundamentalist Islamic countries, particularly from Saudi Arabia, and having them gradually be exposed to the West through places like Hamburg, Germany, and the Al-Qaeda Mosque, which had a really zealot jihadist imam. And that he would then immigrate, to get those people immigrated into the United States, where they would sign up for flight school, and they would learn to fly airplanes in the United States flight schools. And then they would hijack large commercial airliners and airports near his intended target, take out the flight crew, and then fly the buildings as suicide bombers into the targets which he designated as the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, the White House, the U.S. Capitol. He also liked the Sears Tower in Chicago. So it is Ramzi Youssef, not al-Qaeda, that came up with the plan for 9/11. Now, the reason that al-Qaeda got wind of the plan is that Sheikh Khalil was... his sister was romantically involved with Ramzi Youssef, and they got to know each other. And then Sheikh Khalil ended up meeting with and forming an association with Osama bin Laden, and he shared that plan with him. Now, more on Ramzi Youssef. Ramzi Youssef, if the name isn't familiar to you, was the ringleader of the first bombing of the World Trade Center back in 97, when he arranged to have explosive filled cars, and cars filled with ammonium nitrate and diesel fuel, the fertilizer bombs, the kind of bombs that that Ramzi Youssef himself designed to bring down the Oklahoma City federal building. He conceived those, actually met with Nichols to explain, to teach him how to build those kinds of bombs. Well, he built the same kind of bomb for the World Trade Center, put it in the underground garage. Now, that should have actually brought the World Trade Center down because of the large store of diesel fuel in the basement of the World Trade Center that was moved to World Trade 7 later on after the bombing. He is a guest of the feds now. He is in prison. So if you wanted to find the mastermind of 9/11, because even when he was hauled away after being convicted of the first bombing of the World Trade Center, and he says, see, you failed, there's the building there that was being helicoptered away, it still stands. And his comment to the FBI and U.S. Marshals was, not for long. We already had in custody the mastermind of 9/11. We did not need to invade Afghanistan to hold him accountable. He was sitting there in a maximum security U.S. prison. 9/11 went according to Ramzi Youssef's plan. We know that Muslims, most of whom, some 75% of whom, were from Saudi Arabia, immigrated into the United States, came in on green cards, and they... went to U.S. flight schools, and in those U.S. flight schools, they learned to fly airplanes, and they hijacked airplanes principally out of Boston, and flew two of them into World Trade Center 1 and 2, and one into the Pentagon. Now, I know that when it comes to flying into the Pentagon, that there are those that said there was no airplane and, you know, there's not a single part of an airplane. There was a U.S. missile. Oh, my God. Talk about stupid. There's airplane debris all over the Pentagon. And there are sites that show thousands of pictures of airplane parts lodged in and around the Pentagon. It's even an image of the airplane flying into the Pentagon, as well as the bodies and remains of those who are aboard the airplane in the debris field. As we know, one plane was crashed into Pennsylvania. It was intended for the U.S. Capitol, and we have video of the two of the planes flying into World Trade Center Building 1 and 2. Both buildings, I've been on the top floor. I've held seminars there. I was a keynote speaker once in the top floor of World Trade Center. Pretty familiar with the open skeletons nature of that building. The perpetrators of 9/11 all left video testimonials quoting the Quran, quoting the Hadith as to why they were doing this. They're celebrated as heroes, the 19 around the Islamic world. The voice recorders of those aircraft all have the Muslims citing verses from the Quran and Hadith, screaming Allahu Akbar. Allah is most great. Allah is greatest, as they perpetrated the crime. These are known facts. Those facts are irrefutable. That's the story of 9/11. Now, as it relates to the Twin Towers, of course, they fell because the intensity of the fire that was caused by the impact of the two jets, the fuel being in their wings, caused the steel outer frame of those buildings to weaken. And once the steel frame was weakened by the heat of the fire, it buckled. And once you had one floor buckle and fall on the floor below it, you added double the weight on already compromised beams. It very quickly gave way. Then you have three floors falling on the next floor. It gave way even more quickly. And ultimately, the buildings, both of them, crashed, coming to the ground. Now, as it relates to building number 7, yes, the conspiracy theorists just love building number 7 because there is no sign that an airplane hit it. So since their theories of thermite on the beams and World Trade Center 1 and 2 have been all verified by everybody that has ever tested the theory as absolute poppycock, now turned to building number 7 and said that it was brought down because the U.S. government put thermite on those beams and it was a planned demolition. And they say that the U.S. government planned and perpetrated it to conceal certain files so they would never be known. And I've never bothered really to study why building 7 fell, because it just seems so obvious to me that if you have the North Building, which was so very close to it, they even shared the same driveway, the same ramp system, the same delivery system. They were open to each other. There were all sorts of pictures taken that day that showed enormous gouges, structural external gouges in the building from the debris falling from the North Tower, and then fires that raged in that building throughout the day. That it was obvious that the destruction of the North Tower is and the fires and the damage done to the North Tower is what brought Building 7 down. And it was so obvious, I just said no reason to study it. Today, and mostly in our second hour, I'm going to disclose the history of World Trade 7, which is also called the Solomon Building, so that you have an understanding as to what actually caused it to fail. But before I do that, I want to reshare what God had to say to us about conspiracies. So speaking to those who are not listening to him, while at the same time leaving them without excuse, Yahweh exposed his position on national politics, on diplomacy, on militaries, and especially on conspiracy, while at the same time mocking human institutions and their claims. This is found in the 8th chapter of Yeshayah, Isaiah. Decide to form associations and treaties, nations, and thereby choose the means of destruction. Ponder the implications, every distant land in a strange place. Choose to prepare yourselves for war and be dismayed and devastated. This is Isaiah 8 and 9. What God is saying is human plans, human schemes, all they do is lead to, well, bad things. Bad things happen when nations and individuals scheme together. So God's saying, you know, go ahead. Decide on treaties and associations, you know, like World War One. World War One was a direct consequence of one stupid, foolish act, and then all of the treaties and associations the nations had and pacts to defend one another or against one another, we had a horrible war. Yeah, the same thing took place in World War II. It was the associations and treaties. The Obama administration is going around the world now telling countries that, boy, if you go to war against China, we'll back you and we'll fight the Chinese. We're doing the same thing against the Russians. We're doing the same thing in the Middle East, but we're arming and abetting both sides, providing arms to the Sunnis, Mujahideens in Syria, and providing arms to the Shiites in Iraq to combat the Sunni Mujahideen that we armed in Syria. God is saying, if that's your plan, if you're going to create associations and treaties, that'll be the means of your destruction. He's right. We'll read more in a moment. Folks, the reason we're taking the time to do this is not only because I abhor conspiracy theories. I just think that those who expound them are absolute nincompoops. And that I don't want any association with them because they are a credibility cesspool. And that what I'm sharing about Yahweh's testimony, that the presentation of the news and why you should walk away from and not trust your government, not trust your military, not trust your police, not trust your religion in particular, is a story that is so unpopular, but so well researched and so well documented, that even as well it researched and as documented and as logical as it is, it's so unpopular that to have the stain of conspiracy association, which completely destroys credibility in its proximity, is absolutely deadly to this mission. And so it is for that reason that I'm lashing out against it. But it's also because Yahweh doesn't want us to promote conspiracy. But it's also because if you tend to believe lies, then you can't even take much credit when you come occasionally to stumble on the truth. So you really want to be careful. You'll destroy your own credibility as well. And you want to check this tendency to discard that which is reasonable, informed, and intelligent when you latch on to lies like chemtrails or Building 7 was a government plot. These things are really harmful for you. So if you're on the edge of this, I want you to understand this is for your own good. These things are really harmful for you. They destroy your credibility and that they show that you aren't reasonable, that you aren't rational. That's not good. All right. One of the reasons also that I'm telling this story is that we can learn a great deal from the truth. We can learn that the United States government did something that was suicidal when it rented the Taliban to give a proxy war to the Soviet Union. And if we understand the consequence of doing the wrong thing, then we're at least in a position either not to repeat the mistake or to separate ourselves from those who perpetrate such immoral actions. If we come to understand why Islam motivates jihadists to be suicide bombers, then at least we're in a position to reject the religion, to speak out against the religion. We're in a position where we understand why 99.9% of terrorist acts today are perpetrated by fundamentalist Muslims. The truth is very helpful, particularly in cause and effect. The truth is very helpful in terms of understanding who's really to blame. I mean, there is reason to blame the U.S. government for 9/11, and that is that the files on Ramzi Youssef's computer regarding the plan of 9/11 were made available to the U.S. government and to its FBI during Ramzi Youssef's trial and investigation in the Philippines. So we knew what was coming. We knew how it was going to be perpetrated. And then once it did happen, the Bush administration did everything they could to protect the Saudi Arabians, removing all of the direct associations with Saudi Arabia from the final report, redacting them. We have lots of reason to blame. When Bush decided that he was going to invade Afghanistan because they were responsible for 9/11, and you know the truth, you realize that all of those who died, all of the money that was squandered, breaking that country, making a bad situation worse, was suicidal. And you'll come to the point where you won't be supportive of the military when it's used in such foolish fashion. There was no Afghani that was part of 9/11. The Afghanis didn't declare war on America. The perpetrator of 9/11 was already in jail in the United States. And yet we not only invaded Afghanistan, making a bad situation worse, we invaded Iraq. All because Bush claimed they had weapons of mass destruction, which they did not have, and that he was harboring al-Qaeda, which was untrue. So the facts tell a story that is important for us to know. And the consequence of U.S. and worldwide stupidity regarding these things is important to understand, as is cause and effect. Now, when we return to Shattering Myths after the news and commercial break, we will return to Yahweh's statement as to why he doesn't want us to be conspiracy advocates, and then specifically to Building 7 of the World Trade Center Complex. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. We'll be back in a moment.